The Atlas Mountain Race, 1987. It began in Zegura, Morocco, a city frequented not only by marathon runners with enough gumption to submerge themselves in the Sahara's baking hot sands, but gear-covered enduro racers ready to rev their engines in whatever terrain the course brings. The Saharan course was a course that showed no mercy. If anything were to go wrong, just one thing, riders could find themselves stranded in the Saharan wild. Riders must be prepared, trained, and ready for anything. Get far enough into the race, and your course is set. Do not let the desert win. This blazing race did, however, almost beat Christian Travert, riding in the 1987 Atlas Rally. He was part of the sponsored Camel Off-Road Racing Team, riding a Kawasaki KX500 two-stroke. He prepared it with an extra 20-liter tank in the back, giving it a capacity of 40 liters, 10 gallons, of fuel. It was his first African rally, and he was ready. Once the race started, he stayed in the top tier, but once the sands set the course, he was lucky to come out alive. Once he hit the sand, he knew he needed to find the right speed to float from one dune to the next. He said, "It was like piloting a boat on choppy seas, and once I figured it out, I coasted at around 140 kilometers per hour, 85 miles per hour. What a blast! I love it so much." But his feelings of pure freedom were buried in the sand a few hundred miles in. He looked down and noticed his engine light had come on. In of itself, not the worst problem. But then the engine stalled and quit. His engine seized in the middle of the Sahara Desert. Travert explained that when their tanks were made, they put foam inside to prevent the gasoline from sloshing around. It is a way to make their bikes more stable when riding on rough terrain. How they had to add this foam, however, was different from the traditional means. Because the tank was already welded on, the foam had to be added afterward. They cut the foam into smaller pieces to get it inside the tank. One of the shavings from the foam pieces made it into the gas filter, got stuck, and plugged the carburetor jet. The offending foam was preventing the gas from flowing, thus seizing the engine. The race had now beat Christian Travert, but he couldn't let the desert win. Frustrated at the loss, Travert was forced to shift gears to survival. At this very moment, he thoroughly regretted removing the extra water from his bike the day before. He chose to fill his gas tank to the rim instead of carrying the emergency 2 liters of water. He was now far away from any other riders. No tire tracks from his competitors were in sight. Before the handy GPS invention, maps and a compass were what you had to get your bearings in 1987. He believed he was somewhere between Algeria and Morocco and felt like a small overheated grain in an ocean of sand. Travert decided to head south toward a small dot he noticed on the map, hoping it was a settlement that could offer help. Now midday, the sun was blazing in full glory, and Travert decided to stay covered to protect himself from the sun and attempt to keep any possible moisture inside. He kept all of his gear on, his helmet, goggles, boots, and his yellow Camel-sponsored synthetic shirt. With his heavy motorcycle boots, they slowly became heavier and heavier as they filled with sand. It was no less than 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and Travert was climbing 10 to 15 foot sand dunes in full gear. Drenched and barely able to see from the sweat flowing into his eyes, he pressed on for several hours. Believing it might just be a mirage off the distance, he spotted a black dot. The view since that moment had been sand and only sand with gently oppressive contour lines. A blank canvas. But the dot moved. Travert was beside himself, and the light of hope started burning brighter and brighter. Walking faster to catch up, he realized it was a Tuareg man on his camel. He was too far to be heard. He was exhausted from the heat, thirsty, and desperate for this hope to be realized. He mustered enough energy to get to the man as fast as possible. Much to his surprise, while en route, the Touareg stopped, got out a rug, and sat down to have tea. One moment, Travert was questioning if he would survive another day or see his family again. And the next, he was sitting with a Touareg on a sand dune having the most enjoyable cup of mint tea and fresh, juicy oranges. He had never been so grateful for oranges in his life. After some moments of recovery and basking in the overwhelming feelings of gratitude, Travert attempted to explain to the Touareg man that his motorcycle had broken down, and using his map, pointed to where he needed to go. The man nodded, offered him some tea, and they hopped on a new mode of transportation Travert had yet to experience, a camel. It was an hour before the road evened out, and they came to a large plateau. There, the pair stopped as the night approached, and Travert got to sink his teeth into another life-saving orange. The next morning, the whir of a bright orange motobikane graced their ears. A kid was on it, riding towards them. Immediately, Travert knew he wanted nothing more than to ditch the camel and buy the moped. Everything in his body ached, and his head was throbbing. He needed to get back to civilization. Taking cash out of his pocket, he offered the kid $200 to buy the moped. But $200 was worth nothing to the kid, and Travert was met with a mere offer to ride on the luggage rack back to the village instead. His new Touareg friend bid Travert goodbye and sent him off with a fresh bag of oranges. Travert would never forget the gratitude he felt for the people of the desert who decided to save him. His hope would not disappoint. At a whopping speed of 15 miles per hour, the struggling moped finally made its way into the village after more than an hour of travel. That long on the luggage rack, Travert realized the camel was much more comfortable of a ride. He hopped off the moped, and before he could turn around to say thank you, the kid had already bolted away in a hurry. The village had two or three adobe homes, and he met two Berber men with large families. Attempting to communicate in a mix of French and Arabic, Travert understood that there were 20 women and an innumerable amount of kids. The men couldn't even remember how many. It was a small oasis of a hamlet fed by a small water well. The children looked like they had been caked in mud and dust. They were running around with huge smiles on their faces and more than curious about the new stranger among them. Travert was still in his foreign-looking motorcycle gear, and the children couldn't get over his helmet. To them, it was as if an alien from another planet had just arrived, and his helmet held some mysterious magic. They lined up, anxious to touch it. At the village, Travert rested and got some bread and gallons of water from the locals. The evening drew near, and he spent another night sleeping in the sand with his helmet as a pillow. Early the following morning, he took a trail that one of the Berber men showed him would lead to a sort of bus stop. A military truck stops there once a day, and if he was there waiting when it arrived, it would pick him up. The trail took him over 4 hours. Once he arrived, he waited. The sun was setting, and Travert couldn't decide if and where he should sleep. Too close to the trail, he might get run over. Not close enough, and they will miss him and keep going. Animals in the desert get loud and noisy, and even though he was beyond exhausted, he couldn't sleep with everything mulling in his head. Daylight broke, and the blessed sound of a diesel engine woke him up. It was a Renault military truck, and it stopped to pick him up and brought him to Alnif. At Alnif, Travert met two French men who had fallen behind in a race due to an accident in their Mitsubishi Pajero. They couldn't believe all that Travert had endured, and were intent on getting him to a doctor. He was in for yet another extremely uncomfortable ride, as the only space available to squeeze in the racing car was in between the contorted roof and the gas tank. He crawled in and laid flat for another choppy, achy 200 more kilometers that ended up taking them at least 5 hours. Though painful, Travert noted that this was his ride back to life. They made it to the checkpoint, and his team was there. Travert could barely peel himself out of the car, but when he did emerge, his team gasped. Search teams had already stopped looking for him. He had been gone for 4 days, and now they had their eyes on him. 33 pounds lighter, and beaten up by the strain of survival, he was indeed alive. In conjunction with his determination and courage, it still took a small army to save Christian Travert. Recounting this survival adventure, he remarked, "Survival is but a succession of seemingly small details that click with one another in the most exquisite manner. I am lucky. I came out alive with a whole new attitude about life. I became grateful for the little things, especially oranges." Prepared or not, you never know when you might end up
in the wild.
Today's episode was narrated by Ian Scotto and written by Shannon Copland.
Thank you for tuning in to another exciting installment of In the Wild. To hear more captivating stories of real-life survival, hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Stay prepared, because you never know when you may find yourself in the wild.